court appointed is meant to be for entertainment purposes and basic legal information only.
Nothing in this podcast should be considered as legal representation nor legal advice.
Only use the knowledge presented herein to dazzle your friends or possibly win bar trivia.
Tommy Smurl, and I am just a dude.
Well, Tommy, another week is in the books, just about.
Almost, and it's about that time.
What time's that?
Where we do our podcast.
Oh, yeah, that
You're
time.
You're here, right?
Well, yeah, I am sitting across from you with a microphone in front of my face. So, yeah, it's that time.
Yeah, there you go. Wake up. And this week, we drew a little inspiration from my daughter and her husband over on Sawbones. They talked about immigration law as it applies to the medical part of it, your medical needs when you are immigrating to the United States. So we decided, since that's a topical conversation to have, we'll study the law part of that.
Yeah.
So now you'll have the medical part on theirs and the law part on ours. So you'll be fully informed about immigration.
That's right. And if you don't listen to Sawbones, you definitely should. It's an awesome podcast.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's one of my favorites.
And, you know, there's a lot of things going on right now with our new president. And there's a lot of things that we could talk about. But the one thing, we want to talk about the law and what's going on and what's topical. And we might crack a joke or two just because it's there.
And that's kind of what we do.
Some of this stuff just writes itself, you know? So we may do that, but we don't want to become political. This is not a political discussion. We're merely making observations of what's going on, the validity of it, you know, what the law, what the courts, what the process is, and trying to explain that for dudes like me that don't know all these kind of things. And it's very interesting. We want you to be informed and know what's coming up.
You know, I thought you were actually, when you suggested this topic idea to me, I thought you were taking inspiration from Led Zeppelin.
The Immigrant Song?
Which happens to be one of my favorite Led Zeppelin songs.
Yeah, that is a good one. We talked about that a couple weeks ago when we said that was the A side of song Hey, Hey, What Can I Do?
Yeah. Well, since we always seem to bring up Led Zeppelin during this podcast, that's...
is that what that is?
Yeah. Okay. I like to get the lead out when I can, you know.
Get the lead out.
As most of you know, we switched over to Audio Boom.
Audio Boom!
Audio Boom! So you can find us on Audio Boom now. If you're listening to us from anywhere else, I don't know how you are, but...
Well, iTunes, it's all the same ways.
Well, yeah, but we're hosted on Audio Boom now. So if you get it directly from...
Libsyn,
you shouldn't do that anymore. And I don't know...
Because they don't have our new episodes.
Yeah, but I don't know if they can even hear this. I don't know why I'm talking about this. Anyway, we're on Audio Boom.
You can't hear us. If you turn up the volume, you might be able to hear us.
Well, anyway, when we switched over,
what do you say?
When we switched over to Audio Boom, we also got a new logo, and all the excitement of our new episodes, I forgot to give a shout out to Carl Huber, who designed that for us.
Yeah, Carl, way to go, dude!
Yeah, thanks, Carl. Carl makes some awesome T-shirts too, and you can find him on Twitter at @natural20shirts. Natural, the number 20, and then shirts. And it's got links to his different sites where he sells T-shirts and stuff. So you should go check him out.
He's a good dude.
He's a good dude and did an awesome logo for us.
Yeah. I mean, you know, the other one was all right getting started out. But as we move on up the chain, we had to look a little slicker. And he did that for us.
That's right. And since we're on Audio Boom now, I've noticed that we have quite a few listeners from Canvey Islands.
Canvey Islands?
Yeah.
I don't even know what that is.
I didn't either. I had to Google it. I thought it was like maybe some island in the Pacific somewhere, but it's actually looks like it's a city outside of London in the UK.
Well, hello, Canvey Island. Yeah. Blooming good to hear from you. Well, you're not hearing from us, and you probably don't say blooming. I think I'm getting my accents mixed up again.
Yeah. Well, let's get to the meat.
Work on that.
Let's get to the meat of this podcast.
That's right. Let's get to immigration law. We also had a couple of people write in on our Facebook page that were asking about that, and some had some personal ties to some things going on. So we're going to try to explain this as best we can.
Yeah. So as everyone probably knows, Donald Trump signed an executive order, and it's kind of been called the immigration ban. This is kind of the common term for it. The actual name of it is the Executive Order Protecting the Nation from Foreign Terrorist from foreign terrorist entry into the United States. So the president has the power to issue these things called executive orders. Typically, the executive orders are things that relate to wherever the president has domain over, such as areas of immigration. So the executive power of the president over immigration is very broad. Historically, the courts have described it as a plenary. So basically saying that it's almost without any kind of limits. The president is the one who has the power to regulate immigration. So Donald Trump issued this executive order, and almost immediately there were lawsuits filed. There was one that was in Massachusetts, and then there was one that was in Washington. The Massachusetts lawsuit actually upheld his executive order, saying it was constitutional. But the one in Washington state is the one that is kind of more in the news, because that judge actually struck it down.
Now, who filed these lawsuits? Were they people that were affected by it, or what?
Well, in Washington, it was actually filed by the state of Washington, by the attorney general. Huh. Now, this is the issue we touched on, I think, last week when we were talking about
standing.
Yes, we were talking about standing.
See, I learned something. You learned me something, son.
So basically, the way Washington state tried to argue their way around standing was they said that they would be, if this executive order would stand, that they would suffer irreparable economic harm. The lack of limiting these people to come to their state would cause them economic harm. So therefore, since they suffered some sort of economic loss, that they have standing to attack this lawsuit.
Now, is that because of like tech companies that are out there and stuff? Because I noticed there was also some tech companies that got together out there. Well, they were in San Francisco is where the meeting was, that they got together, and they're against this because of a lot of their people come from other countries that right. would be affected by this.
That could be part of it, because there's a lot of fear that this is a very broad-based kind of executive order, and it wasn't very clearly written, so they're concerned that it could not only limit these seven countries, but it could also limit a lot of other places too. So, but I think the whole standing thing was kind of, I don't know. I mean, I think it might be a bit of a reach to say they're standing there, but the court seemed to think that it was there. So, and I didn't actually read their argument, their opinion about how they argued standing, but I know basically they said that they would suffer some economic loss from it. So,
and that was just one judge that they were before, right? That wasn't like a panel or something.
Right. So whenever you file a lawsuit in federal court, you go to just the basic trial federal court, which is one judge, and that's the trial level. And then if you appeal something from that, you go to the appellate court, which is the Ninth Circuit of Appeals in this instance. So this judge, it was Judge James Robart, and the Washington state had asked the judge to grant a temporary restraining order, also called a TRO. And basically the judge heard the arguments.
It's not a TKO.
TKO? No, it's definitely not a TKO, because a TKO would mean it's over. That would be what would happen if you go to the Supreme Court and you get a ruling against you. Then that would be
TKO.
Well, yeah, I think TKOs are typically if you get three knockouts in the same round.
Yeah.
So if you lose three times in a row, the trial, the appellate, and the Supreme Court, it's kind of the same thing as a TKO.
TRO.
Yeah, the judge issued a temporary restraining order which halted this executive order, and I guess it maybe allowed people to travel again. So.
And you know what happened to that judge?
What's that?
He became subjected to mean tweets.
He did, yeah. The Donald tweeted at him, called him a so-called judge. So
maybe they'll get him on Fallon to read his mean tweets about him or something.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sure he got a lot of flack over that. One of the interesting things is that this executive order, and I actually pulled it and read part of it. Section 1 is defined as the purpose. It mentions 9/11 in there a couple times. And it's basically attacking the visa issuing process to say that they're trying to stop maybe another 9/11 from happening, or try to keep terrorists from being on the U.S. soil. And one of the questions that judge asked, there was a clip that was going around on the internet, is Judge Robart asked this attorney for the United States something along the lines of how many people from these countries that are banned have been arrested or charged with any kind of terrorist activities in the past 10 years? And she said, well, I don't know. And the judge says, well, I know, and it's actually been zero. So
when I was saying the people that were affected by it, or the people coming from these countries?
People coming from those countries. So okay. How many people from these countries that have been banned have actually been arrested with any kind of terrorist charge on U.S. soil, I think was the way he phrased it. So there's been a couple articles that actually his research may have been a little flawed. There maybe have been one or two, but definitely the number is not very many.
And none of them were the source of origin for any of the 9/11 terrorists.
That's right. All the 9/11 terrorists came from different countries, which if you look at the way this executive order is worded, and it draws heavily on 9/11, it makes you wonder why were those countries not the ones that are subject to this stricter scrutiny?
Well, the answer that Trump or Trump's people gave was that those are countries with functioning governments. Mm-hmm. That the seven that they listed are either known to export terrorists or have non-functioning governments, such as Syria.
Yeah.
Syria's in the middle of their civil war or whatever you want to call it, and they don't really have a fully functioning government to provide the proper protections for immigration.
And that is definitely one way to differentiate, because that's true. Those countries do not have kind of the classic government that you might like to have on the other
Clearing
side.
Clearing a visa is the least of their worries right now.
Right. So, as I mentioned, this judge in Washington State, Judge Robart, he issued the TRO. There was another judge in Massachusetts who declined to issue any kind of restraining order, so therefore you have different conflicting opinions. And of course, different lawsuits can raise different grounds, so they weren't identical lawsuits.
And they weren't dependent on each other.
No, they're not.
They were filed separately in separate states, so right. They don't really... But then the other question would be, how do states have power to do this over the federal government?
Well, they don't.
Okay.
It was a federal court. There's the issue. Okay. It wasn't a state court.
Okay, I got
you. A state court would not have power to do that unless there was some other grounds. But this was a federal court. So this is a federal judge. This judge was actually appointed by George W. Bush. You would think that he would fall more in line with the Republican ideology, but maybe he didn't. So whenever you have judges that have different opinions or different things like this, is one of the things that actually appellate courts look at to determine if there's different opinions on the same subject. It's not uncommon for this to happen, where one judge might rule one way, another judge rules a different way, and therefore it's ripe because there's a controversy, so therefore it's ripe to be appealed, and the appellate courts look at that when they're trying to figure out, should we take this case or not? Because they don't necessarily have to take every case, but they might say, hey, if there's a difference in opinions like this, then maybe we need to take a look at it. This case in Washington State was, in fact, appealed. Now it's in front of the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, which is seated in San Francisco, I believe. They have, I guess, filed briefs and had arguments, and the court is probably going to issue some sort of opinion pretty soon.
Maybe by the time this podcast is out, they will have issued it.
Yeah, maybe they might have issued it after, before this is released. So one of the interesting things is that this lawsuit, it raised different things, and one of the parts of it was religious discrimination. It talked about immigration law, lack of due process for people whose visas were denied when they were in transit. And so those are some of the issues. And the interesting thing about this appeal in front of the Ninth Circuit is that over a dozen state attorney generals have filed amicus briefs. Those are also called amicus curiae. They were in support of Washington State's lawsuit against the travel ban. And those states were California, Connecticut, Delaware, District of Columbia, Illinois, Iowa, Maine, Maryland, Massachusetts, New Mexico, New York, Oregon, Pennsylvania, Rhode Island, Vermont, and Virginia. So those attorney generals all filed briefs in support of Washington State, and those were called amicus briefs. Interesting thing about all those state attorney generals is that they're all Democrats.
Hmm.
So partisan politics is still at work here.
Well,
so, and some other people that actually filed with this are 10 former national security officials also filed a brief, and they basically said that they felt that this was in no way would it improve national security to have this executive order. Some of the people on that was Madeleine Albright, Avril Haines, Michael Hayden, John Kerry, John McLaughlin, Lisa Monaco, Michael Morell, Janet Napolitano, Leon Panetta, and Susan Rice. All these former national security people said that, hey, this isn't going to help.
Well, and it also affected people who were already not necessarily citizens, but they were already in our country on a proper visa or green card or whatever, the source is. And they had traveled maybe home or somewhere and were trying to come back to the country. So they basically already, it's not like they were immigrating. It's not like they hadn't already been here.
Right.
And they were just trying to come back to where is their home right now.
Right.
And they were still being held up because of this. Is that correct?
That's right. Yes. And there was no real procedure for them to get through this. It was just like, nope, that's it. Stopped.
And this circuit court of appeals that it's in right now, that's like a 3-member panel, if I saw that right.
Correct.
Isn't it?
Yep.
Okay.
Breaking news.
Breaking news.
I just got a text from Mary.
Yes?
Your wife.
Well, she's always up on the news.
She said that they upheld the suspension. So.
Well, that doesn't surprise me.
Yeah.
I think it's going to end up in the Supreme Court.
Well,
is that where it goes to next, or is there another level?
No, Supreme Court. So if they, I haven't looked at this yet because I just got a text. If they indeed upheld it, this is most certainly going to the Supreme Court. So
now, who would argue this then? Does the guy from Washington who originally did that go and argue it, or how does that work? Because there's constitutional lawyers, isn't there? That
yeah.
Argue before the Supreme Court. Not just anybody can go in there.
Well, I think.
I mean, like they wouldn't let your sorry butt in there.
I think they would.
No, I don't think so.
You can be admitted to the Supreme Court.
Really?
Yeah.
I thought you had to be like a specialized attorney and have so many something to be able to go there that not just anybody could walk in.
Well, not just anybody can walk in, but I mean, I could. It's not like I have to go to any more schooling or anything to do that. It would just be a matter of going there and arguing.
Well, you shouldn't argue.
That's what you do with these things.
That kick you out for arguing.
I mean, there may be like some sort of mentoring thing where you're not allowed in there with, unless you have somebody else who...
I thought I saw that in a movie once. That's why I said that. Maybe. I thought there was something about that there was... You had to be a constitutional lawyer and to go before the Supreme Court or something like that, because that's basically what the Supreme Court is interpreting as the Constitution when they're arguing these things, aren't they? How these laws fit within the Constitution?
They are, but I would say that most attorneys argue like quite a few constitutional type things all the time, especially criminal law, because there's so much constitutional rights that you have during a criminal trial. You know, and most lawyers, even though maybe they may have forgotten it, but they studied quite a bit of constitutional law when they were in law school. Mm-hmm. You have to take at least a year of it. I mean, a whole year of your
life. I may be wrong. Like I said, I was referring to a movie. Some movie I saw, it seemed like somebody was got in to be able to argue before it, and they had never been in the Supreme Court before, and they told him you can't go in there if you haven't. For some reason, he was granted some kind of exemption. But I might have, you know, it might be one of those foggy memories I have.
Well, whenever you do argue constitutional law, the different things you look at, there's different basis of review. One is called rational basis review. This is basically the default standard of review that courts apply when considering constitutional questions. This includes due process, equal protection under the Fifth Amendment or 14th Amendment. Courts applying the rational basis review have to determine whether or not a law is rationally related to a legitimate government interest and whether that is real or hypothetical. And this is the basic level of review. There's higher levels of scrutiny too, which whenever there's a law that's subject to higher scrutiny, it's harder for the law to meet that test. The heightened scrutiny is basically applied if there's a quasi-suspect classification or some sort of fundamental right is implicated. Basically, the nature of the interest at issue determines what the scrutiny that is applied by these different appellate courts. But basically, the rational basis review, only the most egregious enactments, and those are not rationally related to legitimate government interest, are overturned. When you're looking at this issue in particular, and this is just the way I looked at it, in the purpose of this executive order, it cites to 9/11, it cites to protecting the nation from these foreign terrorists. And I think that's why that question by the judge was very much on point as to, well, how many times has this happened? What is the legitimate government interest in doing this? Based on what they're saying in the Section 1 purpose of this, it's, you know, for 9/11 attacks and terrorist things like that. But the ban doesn't ban anybody from those countries. So if you're falling back on 9/11, if you're falling back on these terrorist opportunities, and there hasn't been any, and none of the countries from 9/11 aren't banned, then how is this possibly rationally related to a legitimate government interest?
Yeah, what country did, which one of those seven countries did Timothy McVeigh immigrate in here from?
Ireland? I don't know. I don't know. He was McVeigh. That's, what is it? Is there Scottish maybe?
I don't know. But all I'm saying is he was already here. He didn't immigrate from anywhere, and he committed one of the worst atrocities that we had.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's the level of scrutiny I think that was applied, and that's the bare bones one, the easiest one to get past. And I still think if you look at this from the easiest one to get past, I still don't know that it does, because, I mean, maybe it's the prop. Maybe we need that law. Maybe we don't. I don't know. But I think the way it's written and the way it's being applied, I don't see how it passes this.
Well, one of the things too, you know, sometimes you can talk too much, and I understand that when they're ruling on some of these things, they can look at stuff that's like behind the actual presentation of it based on other things that have come up. And in December of 2015, Trump proposed having a Muslim ban.
Yeah.
So now you turn around and you frame it and you word it so you say it's a security thing, when in essence, you're banning people that are majority Muslim. It looks like a Muslim ban. I mean, you know, I always heard if it walks like a duck and talks like a duck, it's probably a duck.
Yeah. Rudy Giuliani on January 28th on Fox News, he stated that Trump had initially called it a Muslim ban. I mean, Giuliani is the White House cybersecurity advisor, so he's even inside the White House, and he said that. So,
yeah, and you can't base it on every Muslim as a terrorist. I mean, that's discrimination.
And it runs afoul of the Equal Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment if you single out certain religions like that.
And so, and really, our immigration laws originated with the 14th Amendment.
Yeah.
I mean, that was how that came about, that opened up our borders, basically, to immigration in the first place.
The one thing too that's very interesting is that I think it violates the First Amendment as well, because the order suspends admission of all refugees. But then what it does is it turns around and asks the Secretary of Homeland Security to prioritize refugee claims by minority religions. So if you're in a minority religion from one of these countries, then you get priority. So basically, it deprioritizes Muslims and prioritizes Christians. And that's in Section 5B of the order. So essentially, it's a
religious discrimination.
Our government is basically saying, we'll take the Christians, but not the Muslims from these places. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's essentially what it does in practice. It doesn't say that, but I mean, that's what it does.
Right.
You know, there's some real problems under the First Amendment, I think, too. Well, but you said something about the 14th Amendment being the origin of all the immigration, though.
Right, because up to that time, citizenship was granted by birthright and changed it to being on the soil. And the 14th Amendment was actually because we had African-American slaves here who were not allowed to be citizens. And the 14th Amendment made them all citizens for the fact they were here.
Right, if you're on the soil, then you're basically a citizen.
Yeah, and it changed it to the rule of soil instead of the rule of blood, and it was rule of blood prior to that.
Right, and that's where a lot of the term like anchor baby kind of comes into play too, is because the theory with anchor babies is that you could illegally immigrate into the United States, you have a child here, that child, since they're born on this soil, is a de facto American citizen, and then you would have to try to deport the parents of an American citizen, which you can't do, really.
Right. So they were saying that people were crossing the border illegally, coming in, having a baby, so that they could all be citizens.
Right. And that was the difference in the change, like you said, in the 14th Amendment between being American, I guess, by blood, or American by being on the soil. So.
Right. And that was the first thing that opened up our borders. And then of course, we proclaim that in our poem, "Give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free, the wretched refuse of your teeming shore. Send those, the homeless, tempest tossed to me. I lift up my lamp beside the golden door." That's all real noble and everything, but could we put that a little bit better? Because it kind of sounds like we're saying, load up a boat with all your despicable people and send them over here. Could we say, send us your shining, your glowing examples of your country?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we kind of picked that. Send us your wretched refuse. Do we really want your wretched refuse? Yeah. No, we want the shining examples. We want the people that want to come here and be a functioning part of our community. We'll take them too.
Yeah.
Now, let's just don't leave them out. We don't want just the wretched refuse.
We'll take three wretched refuse, but we'll give one shining example. Three to one.
No, let's do it the other way around.
Oh, one to three?
Yeah. Yeah. We'll take three good ones and one wretched refuse.
I'll trade you. It's like a baseball card swap. Some of the other things that I think that the executive order might have problems with that some other people have talked about is due process. And I mentioned this a second ago. So basically, if someone's excluded at the border, there has to be some sort of review. And without any sort of review, there's no due process. I mean, that shouldn't be hard to demonstrate, because basically all these people were just held there. One thing that the attorneys who flocked to the airports for all these people, they would file habeas corpus petitions, which we talked about too. And a habeas petition is for people that are illegally detained. And those people who were at the airports, and they had the attorneys file these different things. Habeas corpus, that's an extraordinary writ. And there is actually precedent for non-citizens filing these as well. That was in the Guantanamo cases, the different, I don't know, I mean, if you call them, I don't say prisoners of war, because I don't think they were classified as prisoners of war, but the Guantanamo detainees, they filed habeas briefs on their behalf because they were alleging that they were being held there without any kind of, being held there illegally without any kind of due process or any trial system or anything like that.
But that, the Patriot Act gave them the ability to hold them if they were suspected that they had ties to terrorist activities, wasn't that right? I mean, that's what they were holding him under, because that was outside of our normal laws at that point. And I believe the Patriot Act gave them the ability to do that.
I believe so, yeah. I mean, the Patriot Act is... There's a joke in Arrested Development, that TV show.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things the guy keeps saying is, I think he's like, the attorney's like, have you read the Patriot Act? Read the Patriot Act. I can do this. I mean, it's like it, there's a lot of power that was granted the Patriot Act.
So. Yeah. Well, it was scary times. We'd never had somebody fly planes into our buildings before. So, you know, yeah. There's a lot that came out of that.
Well, but if they infringe on our, if the government cracks down on our rights and infringes on our rights because of some sort of terrorist attack and we lose some of our liberties, then they've won, in my opinion.
Yeah, and that was one of the arguments. How much of our liberties are we willing to give up for the sake of greater safety?
Yeah.
I think that's still, you know, the pendulum's always swinging. At that point, maybe it swung all the way to tighter security and less liberty. And now it's been a while. And things are swinging back and people are loosening those things up. There was an article today in the paper where a guy was interviewing Syrian President Assad about the ban. He asked him, he asked about the 4.8 million people who have fled Syria. And he said, do you think any of those refugees could be terrorists? He said, oh yeah, there's definitely terrorists in there. So, I mean, he said, but I'm not going to weigh in on whether the ban is proper or not. That's an American issue, and I don't care about it. He said, but he doesn't want any of those people going to any other countries anyway. He wants them all to come back.
Yeah.
But I thought that was interesting that he came out and said, oh, yeah, you can find it on the net. Those terrorists in Syria holding a machine gun or killing people. They appear as peaceful refugees in Europe or in the West.
Well, I mean, you know, if you think about it, if you look at the executive order and it's titled Protecting the Nation from Foreign Terrorist Entry into the United States. I'm for that.
On the surface.
Yeah.
In practice. It's in the execution of it.
Yeah.
And, you know, if they just came out and they said, look, here's another layer we want to add to the vetting system for people that are first-time immigrants to our country, not people who are already here, have already gotten a visa and things like that.
Right.
Then I think that you would have a little bit more credibility, you know, if they want to add one more layer to it. But it's still, I don't know if we have the entire process here, but it's not like you go sign up at the post office, like for a passport, and then you go in 2 months or something like that. I mean, a lot of people are waiting years to be able to come here. Yeah. So you've got plenty of time to check people out and stuff like that. It's not like they just, oh, I got mine, here we go. Signed up last week, and here we go.
Well, I think to get visa, to get entry into a country, it varies. I know because I've done some international travel, and I know when I went to Brazil, actually, I had to send off my passport down to the Brazilian embassy, I think I actually went there and had to apply for it, and then they put it in there. I mean, you have to apply ahead of time. Some places like Indonesia or Bali, you basically just show up, and they give you one at the airport. There's no real background or anything like that. I can only assume that coming to the United States, if you try to get a visa to come to the United States, there's going to be some major hoops you have to jump through. I'd guarantee there are.
Oh, yeah. So what I'm saying is it's not an easy thing already to add another layer of difficulty. I mean, you've probably got some good processes already in place.
Yeah.
One of the other things that's going on, they're staging a protest in San Francisco. And it's a group, they have a Asian background, and they draw a great parallel between this and the 1924 immigration law. They say that they think that that started out just like this. In 1924, the law was changed that wouldn't allow Japanese immigrants into the country anymore. Just a few short years later, there was an executive order signed that started the internment camps where they held all the Japanese at the outbreak of World War II. Mm-hmm. A lot of these, they say, stirred up the anti-American sentiment when they first passed that immigration law, and that may have helped push Japan towards bombing Pearl Harbor because of the anti-American feelings that came up. Now, a lot of people are saying that what we're doing now is causing the anti-American feelings amongst all the Muslims. I mean, that may before have not, you know, felt that way. They're feeling discriminated, and we're pushing them towards it. Where ISIS, they were saying ISIS is celebrating this because they've got people now that are saying, well, maybe you're right. Maybe America isn't a good place.
Yeah, they want to ban Muslims.
Yeah, so I mean,
I heard their president say it.
This Tom Ikeda, he's a third generation Japanese American that heads up this group that was there that was protesting it. That was the Johnson-Reed Act in 1924. And that's what he said. He draws a lot of parallels, and that same type thing took that place. And, you know, something I was reading in here, one of the people that's a member of their group that he was also, he when he was a child, he was in one of their internment camps. You know who it was?
George Takei?
Yeah. Sulu.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I follow George Takei on Facebook.
Yeah, he's a pretty popular guy. He's got like 10 million followers or something.
He's constantly putting up those dank memes.
Yeah. I thought that was pretty interesting to read that. You know, a lot of times, a lot of people seem to think that, you know, in your lifetime anyway, that this is the first time that immigration has come up to this extent. There have been many things through the years, though, in studying for this. In 1924, that Johnson Reed Immigration Act, we had already banned Chinese from entering the country. In 1882, the Chinese Exclusion Act, it barred the entry of any Chinese for 10 years, and then in 1904, it was made permanent. And it wasn't rescinded until 1943. Then in 1907, they barred the entry of Japanese and Koreans. In 1917, they established a literacy test and basically said you had to speak English to be able to come to the United States. And then in 1921, the Quota Act started, and that set the first immigration quotas in the nation's history, equal to 3% of the foreign-born admissible nationality in the 1910 census.
You know, looking back on these historical things you're talking about, I mean, you got to ask yourself, do any of these seem like a good idea? I mean, I don't think they do.
And most of them were enacted out of fear.
Yeah.
That was what brought them back. There was some kind of fear. The Johnson Reed Act then in 1924 set an annual ceiling of 154,227 for the Eastern Hemisphere. Each country had a quota representative of its population. So it was like there could be so many Italians, so many Irish, so many Polish, things like that. But it was based on the percentage of who was already here. So, I mean, it really had like some dire consequences for ones. They said at one point there was a 250,000 Italians trying to immigrate to the United States and couldn't because their quota was a little over 5,000 a year is all that could come. And they were being held from coming. So, you know, these things, I don't think that people think them all the way through when they do them. Yeah, 1965 was the big one, though. That was the one that changed the face of America. And it was a really, at the time it was rolled out, Lyndon Johnson signed it. It was started by Kennedy. Kennedy first brought it up, and then, of course, he was assassinated. So then Johnson picked up the torch from there. And at the time that he signed it, he said, this is not a world-changing document. It was 1965, so it was right in the midst of the civil rights era.
I thought you were going to say Civil War.
I almost did say that. You caught me. Civil rights era. So they had passing several laws that were basically making people equal. And a lot of people were asking, why can't we do the same thing for immigration? Why can't we? Right now we're saying we want no more second-class citizens in America. Everybody's the same. We're not going to segregate. So immigrants, we're still classing them to where they're second-class citizens. So this law in 1965 basically was just rolled right in with civil rights and passed as something for equality. But there was no law that was passed in the 20th century that altered the country's demographic character as completely as this law. It says, at the signing ceremony on Liberty Island, President Johnson said that this new law corrects a cruel and enduring wrong in the conduct of the American nation, but he downplayed its expected effect. The bill that we signed today is not a revolutionary bill. Now, there were opponents of it. Sam Ervin was, several lines from this struck me. Sam Ervin, do you remember who he was?
Mm-mm.
If I remember right, he was the senator that held the hearings on Watergate, and he was a conservative Democrat from North Carolina. Now, you don't hear those two words together anymore, conservative Democrat.
Right.
So they had those back then. But anyway, he made the statement, he said, because he was one of the ones that was against this bill. And he said, the people of Ethiopia have the same right to come to the United States under this bill as the people from England, the people of France, or the people of Germany, and the people of Holland. With all due respect to Ethiopia, I don't know of any of the contributions that Ethiopia has made to the making of America. So that was kind of what they were up against, because at the time they had 7 of 8 immigrants coming to our country were of white European descent. After 1965, 9 out of 10 immigrants were people of color coming from other countries, not Europe. So that's what started changing the face of America and making us much more diverse than anybody could ever have dreamed. So while they said that it wasn't going to change anything, it actually ended up changing everything. Yeah. Now, they still had quotas in place. We could only accept supposedly 290,000 immigrants. But they made exceptions for refugees. They made exceptions for families. So pretty soon, we were up around 500,000 a year that were entering the country.
Well, that's why we're the melting pot.
Yeah. I don't know that we've ever completely become the melting pot until we can take out the divides completely. You know, because when things melt together, you don't see any difference.
That's true.
And unfortunately, we still see the difference. And we need to... That's the next thing that needs to be addressed, you know, in our country, if we're going to fix it, is we've got to eliminate those differences in how we look at them.
I agree.
But I thought it was interesting. One of the things that they said in that 1965 at the change, at first they said, the way we're going to rate people as far as who we're going to let in, prioritize who to let in, is at first they said, we're going to do it by what their skills are, and are they skills that will help us here in America?
Yeah.
So if you were a doctor or you were a chemist or a bioengineer or something, you had a better chance of getting in. Well, at the last minute, they said that these were people that were conservative and not really in favor of the bill, but they wanted to change it to if you had family here. Because what they thought was most of the people here are of European descent, so most of the people that will be able to get in under that will be of European descent. But what happened was Europe was booming at the time. They didn't really care about coming here. There were other countries that weren't faring so well. So they would get one person in and then use that for chain immigration. You get one person in, then they could get their whole family in. And that was the way it came about. So it completely changed it. So by changing those things around for really what was a discriminatory act to change that, it ended up backfiring and actually causing greater diversity to enter our country.
It's funny how that works out. I guess that'd be maybe... irony?
As irony or fate?
I don't know.
But I mean, it's whenever I'd come up against hard times and I'd talk to my dad about it, he would always say, everything works out for the best.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's one of those things that worked out for the best, you know?
I know, but if you think about it, if you look to immigrate into other countries, they want to get people who are skilled in certain professions and things like that. They know what different things the country needs. And therefore, if you are skilled in that profession, then they'll take you.
Right.
So, I mean, because that makes sense.
Sure.
Well, that's going to bring us to
Legal Briefs.
Legal Briefs is the part of the show where we go over some different terms. In this case, there's actually some legal terms, some good ones I think I'm going to throw back at and see if you can
remember. Actually, some legal terms? What have you been throwing at me before?
Well,
non-legal terms?
Yeah.
Illegal terms?
They're not always legal terms. Sometimes they're more abstract concepts, I guess. Maybe. I don't know. These ones are just good ones, though. I like them.
All right.
Amicus curiae.
Amicus curiae. That was what all those other attorney generals filed to basically say they agreed with that guy, that attorney general in Washington.
Do you know what the Latin translation of that is?
American writing.
Friend of the court.
Friend of the court.
Oh. Yeah. Amicus meaning friend, and I guess curiae meaning court. So like it's friend of the court.
All right.
It's somebody who's not necessarily a party to the lawsuit, but they file a brief to try to influence the court because they have some sort of strong interest in the matter. So these other states, who are all Democrat attorney generals, just, I guess, coincidentally.
That's another divide I wish that we could melt away, too.
You and me both.
I mean, we need people acting on the behalf of what's best for all of us, not just what the party says.
Well, the problem is you don't have any people who are zealously moderate.
No.
You know, this is the problem.
And see, it's like I referred to as Sam Irvin being a conservative Democrat. It used to be, I think, that our representatives were like, you know, the traditional bell curve. How they talk about in your averages, you have the bell curve. You have your far left as a small part on one side and the far right as a small part on the other. But in the middle of that bell curve is the majority of the people that are the average, and they're either moderate Republican or moderate Democrat. Now, that's the way it used to be. It's not anymore. It's like that bell curve got inverted and everybody's on right or they're on the left, but there's nobody left in the middle. Yeah. Well, maybe except for Joe Manchin. But other than that,
I don't think he's in the middle.
Well, he's not all the way one way. He was the only Democrat that voted for Sessions.
Yeah, well, I'm just saying I don't think he's in the middle.
He's not in the middle, but he leans he leans left. He doesn't. He's not all the way over there.
Yeah.
But I'm just saying that I wish that they, the people, would represent us and not their party.
Well, it's, like I said, it's not as much fun. It's not, you know, hell no, we won't go is the chant. It's not hell no, we won't go. Unless it makes sense and there's a reasonable argument, then, well, maybe we will go.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's what they're supposed to do, is they're supposed to look at these things and then reason it out. But it's just that if that side presented it, we're against it.
Yeah.
If our side presented it, we're for it.
Right.
That's it. That's as far as it goes. And we're the losers. All us people out here, we're the losers. And how do they all become millionaires?
That's a good question.
The job doesn't pay millions. I'm just saying. It grinds my gears.
I was going to say, it's just grinding your gears. The next term is rational basis review.
Rational basis review. Well, that's when you have to see if it applies on a rational basis.
That's true. It's the lowest level of constitutional scrutiny.
Well, I should have known that, because I'm usually at the lowest level of anything.
And the basis of the test is whether or not the law is rationally related to a legitimate government interest.
Okay.
And most laws are, for the most part, generally pass that test. But
well, yeah, it'd be hard to issue something that's not, because most everything is of a government interest, or you just put it under the Interstate Commerce Act, and then it is.
The next one is TRO.
TRO, that is a temporary restraining order.
TRO with Carson Daly.
No, it's a TRO, a temporary restraining order, as opposed to a TKO, which is a technical knockout.
That too. And that's what the court issues. So basically, if you're filing for an injunction, maybe people know that term too, is an injunction. Is like a
conjunction, junction?
Yep.
What's your function?
So the TRO is like an injunction.
Should we sing about how a bill is passed?
I used to love those when I was a kid. The next term, which we've talked about a couple of times now, is standing.
Standing. I'm still standing after. The standing is that you are actually affected by this, and so you have some reason that you're involved in the case because you were actually damaged or you were injured. So
yeah, you have sufficient connection to a case.
Yes.
And the last term is plenary.
Plundering?
Plenary.
Plenary.
Yep.
That's, no, we don't need no more. We got plenary.
Oh, that's awesome. No, it means unqualified or absolute.
Well, I'm unqualified absolutely to answer that question.
So, yeah, the immigration powers of the president are sometimes described as plenary. So,
plenary.
Yeah, they're absolute.
Hmm.
I might be mispronouncing that. I don't know. I don't say that word too frequently.
Well, that's about like that emolumulets or whatever. I never did get that one.
Emolument.
Emolument, yeah.
I listened to it about 17 times on Wikipedia over and over again to make sure I didn't screw it up during our podcast.
That's good. I never could get best I could get to is emulsion.
Emulsion?
Yeah.
Well,
that's slightly better than immolation.
Well, I'm going to go ahead and blaze out of here and finish this one up.
Blaze out of here and finish this one up? That sounds like you're going to smoke a joint or something.
No, I'm going to wrap this podcast up.
Wrap it up, huh? Well, all right then. We can't ride off into the sunset because this isn't the Western one.
Yeah. This one was this was kind of a more serious podcast. Not as many jokes.
Well, shoot, that's my part. I guess I let us down.
I can't be funny.
It's hard to get funny sometimes about these things. These aren't laughing matters.
That's true.
These are trying times and no laughing matter. But we'll do the best we can. We'll try to keep the information coming or whatever we can along those lines, and keep it apolitical.
That's right.
Just like us, we're genderless, apolitical.
What? I'm not genderless. I'm a dude.
Oh, yeah. Well, anybody can be a dude.
That's true.
Male or female? We're all dudes.
We're all dudes.
In the greater scheme of things, we're just dudes.
I'm just a dude.
This dude's signing off.
Thanks to everybody for listening, and thanks to MCRB for use of their song, Doctor, Lawyer, Indian Chief.
And thanks to the McElroy Stable of Podcasts for the use of their recording studio. Their podcasts include Mabim Bam, Sawbones, and Still Buffering, as well as many other fine offerings. And please, take the time to rate and review us on iTunes, especially if you liked us. If you didn't, well, then not so much.
You're not supposed to say that.
You always edit that out, though, right?
Usually. Good. This has been Court Appointed. I'm Mike Meadows, your co-host. I'm a lawyer and a dude.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Sperm. And I...